Now, politics, with our regular political observers, E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post and David Brooks of the New York Times. Our topics this week, Karl Rove, the vacancy on the Supreme Court, and the bombings in London. Welcome back to both of you.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
I want to play you first something that former Ambassador Joseph Wilson said today. Wilson, of course, is the husband of CIA agent Valerie Plame. There's a grand jury and independent counsel investigating the disclosure of her name by White House sources in a Robert Novak column. Here's what Wilson said.
Irrespective of whether a law has been violated, it's very clear to me that the ethical standards to which we should hold our senior public servants has been violated. And that is for that reason that I have called for not Karl Rove's resignation, but for the president to honor his word that he would fire anybody who was involved in the leak.
David Brooks, is President Bush standing by his closest advisor, or is the absence of a vigorous presidential defense of Karl Rove more noteworthy, despite every other Republican offering a vigorous defense of Karl Rove?
Yeah, I think the president is not inclined to leap into this thing when we know so little and when the investigation is still ongoing. It would stun me if George Bush would walk away from Karl Rove. It would take a lot to pry that guy away from the other guy. And I must say, I'm not one of these people who really understands Roveophobia, the idea that Karl Rove is the dark genius at the center of the universe. And I must say, the frenzy is going on around us all week. I still don't know that there's a crime or anything particularly wrong going on here. Joe Wilson was going around saying that the vice president sent him to Iraq, which turns out to be untrue. And Matt Cooper, from what we know of his memo, was looking into that story. And Rove said, no, it wasn't the vice president who sent him. His wife's a CIA agent.
If there's no crime, what's Judy Miller from your newspaper doing in jail right now?
Well, she's there to protect a principal. The principal is they don't reveal sources. That has nothing to do with crimes.
E.J. Dionne?
Well, I think the problem the White House has, we don't know what crime has been committed yet, and we'll soon learn. I think the White House has a problem because it doesn't control this at all. It's one of the first times in the administration where an outside force could have an effect on it. You have a Republican Congress. They're not going to investigate it. But I think the administration...
You mean
has,
the independent counsel. You're
right. You have an independent counsel they don't control. I think there are two problems here. Early on, Scott McClellan said that Rove and two other administration officials had, and I quote him, assured me they were not involved in this. Well, that's simply not true, we now know. Whatever happened here, even if there is not a crime, we know that Karl Rove spoke to Matt Cooper and was trying to undermine what Joe Wilson said. That's a serious problem. The administration didn't tell the truth here. The second problem the administration has is that it has done a very good job over the years when it got into trouble of going after an enemy. In this case, they were going after Joe Wilson. Now, a lot of people are saying Joe Wilson is a self-promoter. Well, if self-promotion discounts you in Washington, the city would be empty. The issue here is, was the administration telling the truth, and was it trying to get out of a mess by attacking somebody else?
David, one more point on this.
Well, I mean, we're in Alice in Wonderland territory. The idea that Joe Wilson was the guy not telling the truth. He said the vice president sent him. That turned out from the Senate Intelligence Committee not to be true. He said his wife had nothing to do with him being sent. That turned out, according to the Senate Intelligence, not to be true. Karl Rove, from what we know about Cooper's memo, was the guy telling what happened.
But on the more central point, he said there's nothing there to the Iraq looking for uranium in Niger, stern Niger story. And at that time, that was still the official line of the U.S. that there was an Iraq.
And Wilson turned out to be right on that, the central point.
Well, we don't want to get deep into that, but the CIA said he did not look deeply into enough. The Iraq was trying to get uranium, but that's deep into the weeds. It just shows how we're getting into Alice in Wonderland territory.
Alice in Wonderland. Okay, on to the Supreme Court vacancy, which you've both written about in columns. And David Brooks, you wrote today about the kind of nominee you think President Bush should name to the court.
Yeah, well, I there's all this talk going around. He should pick a Hispanic. He should pick a woman. He should pick a left-handed professional wrestler.
Or a politician.
Or a politician. Arlen Specter saying, get outside the judiciary. I'm just saying, this is not a one-week political story. This is a nominee that's going to last on the court, hopefully for decades. Pick the biggest brain you can find. Pick an intellectual heavyweight, whether it's a Brennan or a Scalia, who's going to write opinions that people are going to debate for decades. And it just not so much tokenism, not so much first impressions, not so much politics.
But one could say, picking Thurgood Marshall wasn't such a bad idea. Picking Hugo Black, who was a politician, there are some of those groups produce good justices.
You go back over the history of these picks. They tend to be picked for political reasons. Whether they turn out to be good justices is almost a freak of chance. Sometimes they are, sometimes there aren't. But the criteria is rarely who will write the most brilliant opinions.
EJ, you say that whoever it is who's nominated, senators should be asking the nominee about his or her judicial philosophy, and it's preposterous to rule such questions out of bounds, quote unquote.
That's correct. I still think that.
You still think that. It was on Saturday you wrote that.
You know, I admire David's column today because, like, I think all of us like the idea of intelligent justices on the Supreme Court. There are a lot of different kinds of intelligent people you can have. And I think we need to be candid that this is really a struggle for power. There is, on many issues, there is a 5-4 majority on the court. We can pretend that, no, we don't really know how somebody is going to rule, and yes, people can change their minds, but we do know what somebody's orientation is. This is a 50-50 country. I think you need somebody with a balanced view. I think if the president nominated someone who was broadly moderate, whether moderately conservative, more likely than moderately liberal, he could win broad support. I think if you nominated a very, very conservative justice, you would tip the balance of political power in the country. I think we have to face up to the fact that this is a political job and not just an intellectual job.
But that's something that FDR might have done. He might have said, I'm going to appoint a very liberal justice. I want to influence the way the court's going to go. I have a big majority.
Right. Well, in let's say that FDR did win with 60% of the vote in the 1936 election, and at that time, actually, the court was tipped to the right. Mm-hmm. At this moment, this is a 50-50 country, and I think it's better to have a balanced rather than a highly politicized judiciary. I'm against judicial activism from the left, and I think now we're confronting the possibility of judicial activism from the right.
London is the story that's been preoccupying us here for the past week, and the terrible explosions that took place in the London Underground and one in the bus system. Is this a story that has important meaning for us as Americans and for our politics? David Brooks?
I guess my main reflection is that I'm reminded of something the 9/11 Commission said. This is not a war against terrorism. It's a war against an ideology. If a couple of losers in Leeds can listen to somebody and then go out and commit these acts, that's a reminder that it's the ideas that matter and that we're never going to win the war unless we get enough Muslims and enough people saying the ideas that you're hearing in the mosques are terrible ideas. Don't go blow up people.
EJ Dionne, 10 seconds.
I think this shows that we have a long way to go in the war on terror. There is a good debate going on in Congress about whether we are sufficiently protected against things like this and the pork barrel nature of Homeland Security spending. I hope this encourages us to fix that.
EJ Dionne of The Washington Post and Georgetown University and David Brooks of The New York Times, thanks to both of you for talking with us once again.
Thank you.
And this is All Things Considered on NPR, National Public Radio.